call the meeting to order.
Okay.
Yep.
In the absence of Chair Green, I will call the meeting to order and ask for nominations for a chair.
Yeah, so we have to nominate a chair for the meeting.
Who would like to chair the meeting? Would you like to nominate someone to chair the meeting?
Who wants it?
Nominate the new guy.
certainly, I'll give it a go.
Would you like to try that?
Okay.
I'll second.
Okay. Are there any other nominations?
Nope.
If not, we have a motion and a second to elect Ted Collison as chair. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.
No, come on. No. All right.
So the first thing you want to do is get a motion to adopt or modify the agenda.
Outstanding. So can I go ahead and ask? There's a motion to approve, or excuse me, to modify or adopt today's agenda?
Yep. We'll move
motion
7 and 9. Up to, we'll make those 4 and 5 and make 4 and 5, or just move it up to 3A and 3B.
7 and 9?
Yep.
So
right?
3A, 9 to 3B?
Yep.
Any objections to that?
Second.
Any objections?
Nope. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passed. It's not very nice to put you in charge.
That's all right.
We'll help you through.
Hopefully all of us had an opportunity to look at the August 14th minutes. I know I did. Are there any concerns that anyone would like to raise from those minutes, changes, addendums?
I'm going to abstain because I wasn't here.
No, you can still vote on it.
Yep, so I'll make a motion to approve the minutes.
Second.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Opposed.
Motion passes.
You get to say
that. I'll shut up.
That's all right. Yeah. Moving on to our third item here, we have some public appearances today. Anyone?
Jim?
Jim O'Rourke, 2339 Oakwood Avenue. I'm the former co-chairman of the Village of Alloway Bike Fed Committee. A little later on today, you're going to discuss with the DOT crossings on Riverside Drive, and I'd just like them to address the difference between pedestrian islands and the various stoplights, whether the flashing beacon or the or the hawk crossings, the red stoplights. So with regards to what they'd rather see, whether it's at West St. Joseph Street or at the new sidewalk that's going to go in at St. Mary's Street to get across, just like most people in the village don't understand the benefits of the pedestrian island, safety islands versus the stoplights. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. O'Rourke. Anything else? Anyone else?
Nope.
Okay. So I think we can move on to new business this time. This is
3A.
Or sorry, that's right, 3A, the thing we did 5 minutes ago, and I've already forgotten. 3A is a discussion report out on the new water sewer use ordinance modification.
Yeah, we have Bill Oldenburg, Laboratory and Research Manager, and Brian Vanderloop, Director of Business and Services from New Water here to go over the proposed sewer use ordinance modifications.
You want to stand up here?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Okay,
and I'm
going to
bring up your summary.
Yes.
I had it up.
Thanks for being here, guys.
Absolutely. Thank you for allowing us the opportunity to chat with you for a few minutes. Sean asked Brian and I to come here and quickly walk through the changes to our sewer use ordinance. Our ordinance is our rules on how our municipal customers, industrial customers, use our sewerage system. And I'm going to quickly go through these, and Sean's going to kind of help me walk through them since I'm standing here. And we're only going to hit the high points that would essentially have any kind of an impact on a municipal customer. So the village is one of our 15 municipal customers, and we can skip over the industrial side of things. So we have some definitions here. Actually, John, could you blow that up just a little bit?
I'm going to try it.
Okay.
I
have
my full screen.
You can just keep zooming until it fits the page.
Is that okay?
If you can read it, I can read it. So, yes. Yes, that's not a problem. Are we good with this? In terms of everybody can see this fine? Okay. So, billing parameters currently and for the last, since January 1st of 2016, we use flow, BOD, TSS, phosphorus, and nitrogen as billing parameters. We used to have inflow and infiltration on our invoices as a separate line. We haven't been doing that since 2015, so this is cleanup language to take that out. We'll have no impact on how we invoice the village on a monthly basis. These components are just some cleanups of some definitions that are pretreatment related. The fixed charge here is a new definition. So the invoices that New Water sends to the village, in addition to what we bill you, the flow and the four billing parameters, the four load parameters, there's also this fixed charge that gets calculated on an annual basis. It's part of our budgetary process, and it stays the same each month. It might change a little bit year to year, but it's a fixed monthly charge, and it's meant to help smooth invoicing out so you don't see such swings as you used to years ago. So yeah. We did not define that historically.
The portion of that is doesn't change. 65% of our annual capital doesn't change, but our annual capital may change from year to year. Debt.
Yes.
So,
yes.
So that it moves, it ebbs and flows with our debt. So
this is just cleaning up language. This is, we've been doing this again since January 2016. So we're just putting the language up, making it more accurate. These next few sections here are industrially related. So, Sean, can we get 9 up to the top? Billing unit rate. So we have unit rates that we develop. Again, flow in the four load parameters. There's just specific rates for those. Municipal rates. That excludes the fixed charge. Again, cleaning up language. It's been something we've been doing for quite a few years, but just making the ordinance more accurate. Now, here in 5.20, and I think it's 5.25, we can get 10 up a little higher there, Sean?
Sure.
5.25 here. These are some changes, some language changes that do affect certain municipal customers, but not Alloway. So historically, if we did an expansion of our interceptor system and the village had, or one of our municipal customers has, capacity that they have purchased into it, and there's an expansion that's going to cost those that have capacity more money, we can take out a Clean Water Fund loan. That's a very low interest rate loan through the state of Wisconsin, and they're always for a 20-year lifespan. Once we take that loan out as New Water, we cannot pay it off early. Once we take that loan out, we're fixed into it for 20 years. And historically, we would allow municipal customers who were part of that to pay their portion of the loan off early and just pay the principal. But that was being a bit on the unfair side because if a municipal customer pays early and doesn't have to pay the interest, we still do. So the interest still needs to be paid, but then it gets disseminated through our rate amongst all of our municipal customers. So everybody else is paying for the interest that a municipal customer had originally gotten into. Alloway does not have any interceptor loans that are tied into Clean Water Fund loans with us, so this does not apply to anything that you're currently doing.
Are we funding any other loans for other municipalities?
I think we had one or two pay off early a few years ago.
We had a few folks, a few of our customers, when the market conditions were favorable, paid off their principal portion. Then as Bill said, we still are, we can't pay off clean water from them. So that debt service still needs to be paid by New Water. That remaining interest component would get sprinkled into the various rate components in every one of our customers. And even when it paid it off, some component of that would get put back into the rate. So, everybody would.
I think there was one customer that did that, or was there two?
There was a few.
Okay, there was a few that did that. And the ordinance said that they can do that, so we have to allow them to do that. Interceptor cost recovery is language, or actually that 5.25 is also related to paying off those loans early. And it's very unusual. Clean Water Fund loans are really, really cheap for interest rates. And it was just that a few years ago when we were all refinancing our homes, interest rates were so low, unprecedentedly low, that it actually allowed certain municipal customers to save money, which is really in a very, very unusual situation. Once we get into Chapter 6 here, Chapter 6 is prohibitive discharge standards, so this is all related to industrial discharges, and the village does not have any industries that are regulated by the New Water Pretreatment Program. So 6 doesn't apply. Chapter 7 doesn't, so you can keep going. This is all non-applicable, more pretreatment related. 7 is pretreatment related. Keep going, Sean. I think there's going to be a Chapter 8. Chapter 8, all of the Chapter 8 stuff is hauled waste, so we have a hauled waste program. Doesn't apply to you. Now here at 9.05, again, we're cleaning up some of the language related to how we currently bill. So this does not impact how we invoice you on a monthly basis, but language cleanup. All of this is billing methodologies, cleaning up. Here under 9.20, we do have certain areas in our collection system where we do not flow monitor or we do not sample. And they're called unmetered, unsampled areas. And we come up with, on an annual basis, numbers to bill those folks from. So there might be an area that's just a subdivision that's strictly residential wastewater, and we have these general numbers that we come up with. They're recalculated on an annual basis, and historically, they were concentration-based. So we would apply a certain concentration of BOD, concentration of TSS, to a flow, an actual flow that may have come out. And now, since January of 16, we've switched that over to mass. So it's a certain number of pounds per day of BOD, pounds per day of TSS. So again, language cleanup doesn't apply to you guys at all. Miscellaneous charges, that's all cleaning up language, doesn't apply. Unreasonable endangerment surcharge doesn't apply because we don't administer that right now. We're just cleaning up language. We used to say customer, now we're saying municipal customer to focus on the 15 municipalities. And then lastly is our Chapter 12, our dental amalgam chapter. We're completely getting rid of that chapter. So under our, we have a permit that the DNR issues to us, giving us permission to discharge wastewater into the Fox River. And as part of that permit, we were specifically regulated on mercury as a toxic pollutant. And we have a mercury pollutant minimization plan that we developed 12 years ago, 14 years ago. And a lot of it focuses on dentists. So we have 130 some odd dentists in our service area. The federal government decided that dental amalgam was such a big deal that they created a categorical pretreatment standard. So the pretreatment program that regulates industries actually now regulates dentists. And the language that is in the categorical standard pretty much mirrors what was in our WPDS permit through the state of Wisconsin. So Wisconsin and a handful of other states were far, far, far ahead of the rest of the country in terms of dentists, dental amalgam, and focusing on mercury. So the categorical pretreatment standard now applies to all the dentists, so this is a moot point. So we're just striking the entire chapter. So we're going from 12 chapters down to 11 chapters. And that is essentially the end of our changes. As one of our customers, one of our loyal customers, The process is pretty simple. Whenever we change the sewer use ordinance, it's considered rulemaking by state statute. So there's a specific set of state statutes that we need to follow. So right now we're in the middle of a 30-day public comment period. So if anybody, private resident, municipality, an industry, whomever is a customer of ours, wants to comment on this, we published all of this in the Green Bay Press Gazette. We have all of this information on our website. Anybody can submit a written comment over the 30-day public comment period. That comment period ends on October 4th, if I recall correctly. And then we have our commission meeting on the 23rd, I do believe, is the fourth Wednesday of October. At the start of our commission meeting, we have a public hearing. And at that public hearing, anybody can show up and verbally comment on these. You like them, you hate them, you're indifferent, or you can say nothing. And so that public hearing is also meant for comment, verbal comments. Our commission gets all the written comments, and then at the end of the public hearing, our commission meeting begins, and they will approve the changes, some of them, all of them, none of them. Typically, it's all of them. And then these will go into effect. We'll publish these in the Green Bay Press Gazette in finality after the commission meeting with an effective date of January 1 of 2020. And so, Sean, could you go to the very beginning, if you wouldn't mind?
Sure.
So, actually, that's page 4. You've got to get up all the way to the top. So right here, you see the adoption component at the front end of our actual sewer use ordinance. Every ordinance update is listed in there, so you can see each date something was changed and when it became effective. These changes, if they get blessed, and there's no reason for us to think that this is going to be ugly in any way, shape, or form, or people are going to be any contentious issues, they'll become effective January 1. Questions? Thoughts? Comments?
So there's really very little that's going to impact a municipality in these changes.
Exactly. Exactly.
Except for the loan.
The loan is the only one that is has any teeth to it for anybody who has loans through us. And now where interest rates are at, clean water fund loans are a lot cheaper. I think the last one we took out, isn't it something like 2%?
That's less than that. So we get subsidized loans, so 55% subsidized. So I think the last one we just closed on 1.76. So. And typically, it's the older loans that have been out there a while that were our debt. Interest is probably a bit higher, mm-hmm. and then when the rates came down, a few of our customers recognized an opportunity to refinance, just like you would with your house. And perhaps pay off the principal and buy low the interest, which we unfortunately cannot do.
Do you have any idea how much interest is outstanding from those loans that were prepaid?
I'd have to go look at there's, you know, there's, I'd have to, I don't have to.
So Brian and I try to be as transparent as possible with everybody. So whether you have questions now, when we leave here, if you come up with questions, get them to Sean. Sean can get them to us. We will be as transparent as possible. We love the opportunity to come here and speak to all of you. If ever through a budget process, through any other processes, if you feel it's beneficial to have us come in and chat about something that we're doing, we actually eventually are going to get in touch with Sean to find out if there's anything else that the village has interest or concerns about in what New Water is doing, and we would be more than happy to give you any information necessary to keep you educated, help you understand so that you see what we do and how we do things and why we have to do things and how it may or may not impact you. So we're always available. We do presentations at commission meetings and committee meetings a few times a year, but we're always open for it. So, other questions?
Not for me. Any other questions?
I suppose that can't be lucky enough that that's the HVAC and not rain, right?
I think it is.
Oh, awesome. Okay. I thought it was rain.
Well, thank you, Bill.
Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
I do also want to mention that Tom Sigmund, the executive director of New Water, will be providing the New Water budget at the October 1st Village Board meeting.
Okay. Very good. Thanks for being here, gentlemen.
Absolutely. Have a good night.
You too.
Closing that item, we can move on to item 3B, which was originally on 9, discussion on plans for Riverside Drive.
Yeah. In 2017, the DOT had put together 60% plans for the reconstruction of Riverside Drive from the pier limits north to the north end of the village at Marine Street. That project had been has been put on hold, and there have been some questions. What is the path moving forward for the maintenance of the street? I've asked the DOT to come in and provide an update. And Andy's here. Andy's a project manager with the DOT, and I'm not sure.
Dan Sears from Dan Supervisor.
And they're gonna talk about upcoming projects on Riverside Drive.
Yep. Andy Pulser, project manager for Brown County Projects for Department of Transportation, and then Dan
Sears,
supervisor for the Brown County. And so just to back up a little bit and start with the whole story of how we got to where we're at here today. We had a reconstruct project that was originally scheduled for 2018, and
is there any handout on here that we should be looking at?
No, I don't.
Okay. All right, thanks. Sorry to interrupt you.
So as we were going through the design process, that got delayed out to 2022, and at the time we had identified that there was needs to resurface the road, that the road wasn't going to last until 2022. So in 2016, we did at the time it was like a maintenance level resurface of Riverside Drive. So we did a build off 2 inches of asphalt, and we paved 2 inches of asphalt. Before we paved that new surface of asphalt, we put down an underseal called it a Texas underseal. It was like an asphaltic, almost like kind of like a chip seal. There's like an oil that went down, and then a stone, a little bit larger than you see on a normal chip seal because it was going under that asphalt layer. We wanted to try to get that to prevent the reflective cracking up from the original pavement up through the surface. And so far, wanted to provide you a summary of what we're seeing. We've seen good performance from that so far. It's been just over three years. We were hoping, based on the schedule of the reconstruct at that time, we were hoping to get at least 6 out of it to take us to 2022. Now we're thinking we'll get a few more years out of that to take us to 2025 when we have the next project scheduled. And so just a summary of that resurface project. Our tech services section has been monitoring the transverse cracking to see if we could delay the process with that underseal. So in January of 2017, we monitored, they've been counting the cracks along the roadway. We counted 1 crack. In January of 2018, we had 10 cracks. In June of 2018, so approximately two years after the resurface was done, we had 16. In September of 2018, we had 27. In January of 2019, we had 27. And then in March of 2019, we had 168. So some observations to date show the following. The tenting present every winter before the project that you've noticed, hasn't shown up yet. So that's a good thing. We did have control section where we didn't have the underlayment. That's more towards the south at the alleyway to pier line in front of Dairy Queen. And that hasn't shown any significant difference in performance. And the large change between January and March of this year is likely due to the extreme temperatures that we experienced at the end of January. So we've been happy with how the pavement's been performing so far. It's met our expectations, if not exceeded that so far. That being said, based on the condition of the pavement before we did that resurfacing, we we are monitoring it to make sure that if it starts, if it does start going bad, that it, you know, doesn't all of a sudden turn, doesn't go really fast, and it just is in terrible condition again. So that's part of the reason why we have scoped another project out there for 2025, and that is another resurface level project. The reconstruct project is not in the program anymore. That went away. So the next project out there is another resurface level. And like I said, that's in 2025 right now. That could move around up a year, back a year, depending on funding and the need of the pavement as well. So if we deem it doesn't need to be done in 2025, then we could push it out a year or two and spend that money elsewhere. The scope of that project, right now we look at milling off 3 inches and paving back 3 inches so we can get rid of all that underlayment that we put down. Still to be determined if we do that again. We'd also replace the beam guard and beam guard end treatments. We are evaluating all the curb ramps to make sure that they meet ADA standards. If not, we would reconstruct the curb ramps and bring those up to ADA compliance. So we may have some small amounts of real estate that we'd have to acquire in those areas, whether it be temporary easement or if we have to redesign the curb ramp a bit, maybe some small amounts of fee acquisition. We also are going to be taking a look at the curb and gutter and the inlets. I think we fixed 25 inlets with that last project. Fixed the worst of them, just the cover, readjusting the covers, curb and gutter around them. So that's something we take a look at potentially doing with the next job. And then also coming up here towards the end of September, we're going to be doing televising, which I've been working with Sean on. He's aware of that. And so we're having Green Bay Pipe and TV come in to televise the storm sewer. And we're not anticipating doing any storm sewer work with the resurface job, because if there's any in that's in poor condition, it may need to be addressed sooner than that. But if there's something that does need to be done, could be held off for a few years, we could incorporate that into the job as well. So I think Sean also asked me to discuss potential for like another reconstruct project or after that 2025 project, what would be the plan. There really isn't a timetable for when we do a reconstruct level project. We will continue to monitor the roadway out there in the coming years. There's always a possibility that if things start going downhill fast out there, that the 2025 project gets upscoped to a pavement replacement level job. We don't see that being likely right now, but there's always a possibility. And then, so with that 2025 job, we'd like to get another at least 5 to 7 years out of it, and we'd have to monitor to see how it goes. We don't have the way we used to do pavement designs was there was a certain number of resurfacings you would do, and then the next project was automatically triggered into a reconstruct. We don't do that anymore. We continue to monitor the pavement and try to maximize the life we can get out of a pavement. So that's what we're doing here. We would see how the next project goes and then potentially schedule another resurface level project. We're always in coordination with the municipalities as far as if utilities need to be done and the condition of the storm sewer. Some of those factors could weigh into potentially scoping the next job as a pavement replacement, as well as the condition of the pavement. So again, no timetable for when we do a reconstruct project, but you know, keep you up in the loop on that. Anything to add on that, Dan?
Just a little bit. You know, our funding philosophy for the types of projects we do has changed in the past 4 or 5 years. That led a little bit to why it was originally funded as a reconstruct project, and that we went more off of life cycle cost analysis. That's what he was referring to after so many treatments, resurface treatments and all that. You do a full life cycle cost analysis of it, and it shows that your, you know, best long-term solution is a reconstruct. We've kind of gone away from that life cycle cost analysis because the funding and the program has increased and so on. You know, it did recently here, but it hadn't in the 10 years previously. So they're just trying to get the most miles out of it that we possibly could. It's a pavement treatment. We're trying to get every ounce of life out of the pavement that's out there right now. And you have to treat so many. If you do too many reconstructs, that's too many other roads that we're losing needs. So our philosophy has changed a little bit on that. Always as funding changes, it might change again. If all of a sudden there's a new influx of transportation money down the road, that may change our philosophy a little bit on that right now. But that kind of explains a little bit how it went from a reconstruct to a resurface and then a resurface again. So we'd like to try and get at least 6 years when we do these maintenance level resurface jobs. Like Andy was saying, if all of a sudden we find out next year that this road just falls apart because of the underlying soils and pavement that's underneath that we fixed just starting to reflect so bad that we can't fix the top. And then we do another resurface and that falls apart in 4 or 5 years, boom, reconstruct. That's even in our current funding philosophy, that would force it into a reconstruct. But right now, if we're getting, especially if we get 9 years out of it, or 9, 10 years out of it, that's considered a good, efficient use of the money.
Excuse me, sir. Can you guys help me understand this crack count again? Because it sure sounded to me like we had an exponential jump, and we're equating that to just a cold winter, which, it's cold. I'm struggling to draw a connection with that and say that everything's fine as expected. We weren't all that excited about this exponential crack jump, right? Didn't you say?
It's concerning. That it's noteworthy that the number of cracks jumped. That's something we were seeing on.
Can you repeat the numbers again for me, real quick?
In January, we had noted 27 cracks, yeah. And then in
January
early March,
2019,
yep. And then in early March, the total was up to 168. So you're going to see over the course of the life of the pavement, and especially the winter, even on a normal winter, you're going to see an increase in the number of cracks. But last winter was.
We saw it on a lot of roadways.
Yeah,
we had 2 years with not a big difference, right? But that was just because it was new construction, and you're saying it was still viable enough to deal with the winter?
Yep.
And last year, with it being such extreme winter, we saw this on all our roadways. We saw significant more deterioration than you typically see in the spring than, previous to that. It was tough on a lot of roadways. And just 168 cracks, it's exponential because it was so low to start with. 168 cracks is very good for as old as this pavement is.
For about 3 miles worth of road.
Yeah, for 3 miles worth of road, it's still performing tremendously.
I'm not that worried about the number. I'm worried about the rate of change. Yeah. That's. But if we're all saying that's not bothering anybody else, then that's fine.
The tenting, if you started getting that tenting back, that would be our biggest concern.
Tenting, that's the rumble, undulates?
Comes up like a little. There's moisture in the
shoves, kind of thing.
Moisture gets trapped. Part of the reason we think that the tenting is occurring on Riverside Drive was there was some recycled materials used in the base when the roadway was reconstructed in late 80s, early 90s. It's trapping water, and when that water gets trapped in there, it expands in the winter, and it'll create anywhere where there's cracks, and then that water is most likely in those areas where the cracks are. You get the tenting, and then when you're driving, that's creating the washboard effect.
Were these reflective cracks that came through the old pavement?
That's what we're thinking.
Yeah.
The transverse cracks. There's cracking, raveling around along the curb and gutter.
Okay.
That's not as big of an issue. But
so do you guys go and seal those or treat those cracks when you see them, or you just leave them?
I think there's been sealing operations going on. I've noticed tar on the roadway. Across the roadway. I don't know if assuming the county has done that, but.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So with resurfacing, there's not really any opportunity for adding sidewalks, bike lanes, changing lane widths, or anything like that?
Not with the resurfacing, no.
Can I piggyback a little bit on Kurt? We've been working to make some trail connections east to the Fox River. So far down on St. Joseph, and we want to complete that. And part of the completion would be either the mid block that was identified in the 60%, or the potential of stoplights. If we were to What would the possibility of a joint venture for Stockman's? I mean, we have to work through the process. I understand that, but is that something that could be a viable option for us in the near future, then sometime that's not on paper anymore?
Our philosophy on that has changed also. With the reconstruct, we were looking at signals at Alloway Avenue because of the traffic volumes that were there. Now with the scope of the project being a resurface level, the only way we would trigger installing signals would be safety-related concerns. Okay. So that is something we will continue to monitor at all the intersections, but Alloway and St. Joseph, you know, those are the two that were being discussed.
If they were to fund the signals, would we consider that as part of that?
That would be a question.
Because we may have only asked that question in terms of if we fund the signals.
Yeah.
We could take that question back and say if we did a joint project where local participation funded the signals 100%.
I think traffic would have to comment on that because
they would have
because it's not a connecting highway and it's...
Yeah. We have an interest in whether or not we have an interest in funding it is another question.
Right.
But the other comment that I would just like to share a little bit is not only are we looking at connecting the trail system, but we're also looking at business expansion, redevelopment, and anytime we have spoken with a potential development, as we've been using the 60%, and you know that keeps being pushed back. I mean, to a point, at one point, does that become null and void then? Because those plans are going to have to be redeveloped, and things are going to change. So I'm looking for some little insight on how we should be approaching potential redevelopment.
I would think, as far as an ultimate design goes, that the 60% plans that we had produced for the last reconstruct project would still be the best to work off of. Because ultimately, when we come through with the reconstruct, and if we do a wide outside lane with an urban shoulder, which would accommodate bikes and include the sidewalk along one side, you know, or areas where there was room for it, I think we would probably be our starting point.
60%.
If we came up with another reconstruct or a pavement replacement level project, we would rely heavily on that plan. There'd be a lot that would need to be, but everything, we need to start from 0% again, but that would probably be the direction we would go in to first start.
Our design practices, our best practices for designing and building an urban roadway, those kind of standards for a reconstruction haven't changed, so that you're pretty safe with that.
Okay.
You know, our rural things have changed a little bit. We were doing more of a replace in kind where we are required just unless we have proven accidents, not suspected, where we know that's going to grow or something. That's different. Now we have to just replace everything in kind unless we can show that there's urban with a new reconstruct. We'd still be following the same type of practices, so I would not expect it to change significantly unless you had different public input, but I would not expect that.
So when you take into consideration the safety factors, speeding of number of tickets issued in an area, is that part of the safety consideration, or is that not just accidents or close calls, but you know, we've been monitoring the 172 crosswalk stoplight, 172 on Riverside Drive, because there's a lot of tickets that are written that blanket that area, but we're trying to hone in a little bit where these take place, because we're looking at if that becomes a safety factor because people are exceeding the speed limit on a regular basis, does that fall under the safety factor? I don't know if I've said that correctly or not.
Yeah, I'm not sure, to be honest. It's something I'd have to look into.
Okay.
My experience is no.
So you're talking about
it's strictly off of actual
event versus an actual event, correct?
Yeah.
If we can identify significant risk, does this
theory? Yeah, that, in my experience, has not ever played in yet. Okay. It's strictly based off of the actual accidents that happen out there.
Okay. So that's helpful, too.
And there's no
preventative measures, so to prevent people from getting killed when they're crossing 170 or Riverside Drive to get down to the Fox River Trail. As there was before, there's a huge interest in the village in being able to access the trail from that area. And anything that we can do to make that happen, I think, is terribly important.
Yeah, and crosswalks, that's a little bit different, something new, or, you know, that's a little different than kind of what I was getting at there in terms of whether or not you make geometric improvements. Okay. Something like that, yeah, that can be talked about and worked out through, like, with the resurface job or something. We can work on that, or, like, a pedestrian crossing or something. But to make geometric improvements or something or another, it would have to be a shown accident problem out there.
Is there something that we could do prior to another resurfacing job, do you think? So, if, like, to put a light there and crossing? And
like you did with the Hawk crossing that you have up there right now?
Yeah, or, yeah, at
or a, rap,
or a regular
that
light.
Question, you know.
Yeah, St. Joe.
At 172, are you saying, or at other locations?
St. Joe or Alloway Avenue to be able to get. We just spent a lot of money on St. Joe's. And we have sidewalks on both sides going almost to Riverside Drive. And people want to be able to get across Riverside Drive. So to either be able to provide a sidewalk down to Alloway Avenue, ideally right across at St. Joe, but some kind of a, well, there would be a stoplight, right?
Yeah, it would be tough to do like a rep flashing beacon or a hot crossing at an intersection. That's not the intent of those. Right. It really should be a traffic signal for those, you know, and like a center island. That's a pedestrian refuge for crossing. Mm-hmm. That's not something you put at an intersection that goes at mid-block.
Okay.
You know, is where we typically have those. If you have turn lanes with islands, that can be used for refuge.
Right.
You know, but there aren't any developed out there right now, so you'd have to make geometric improvements through the whole intersection. If you put it in singles and want that island in that area.
You have to widen the intersection if you wanted to put the island in.
Okay, so then the answer to my question is no. Right? We couldn't put a stoplight in at St. Joe prior to a resurfacing project?
We'd have to check with our traffic section, because it would be outside of our project, so that would be something you'd work through them, similar to like the Hawk signal and the rapid flashing beacon crossing. I think you guys work directly with the Hawk signal for sure, with Bob Sherman's center traffic section. So,
Dan, you indicated if we were willing to participate in the cost to install signals,
that might
be a possibility. If,
I don't know if we've posed that question to our traffic. You know, it was more, what are the chances of us adding in those signals into our resurface job? Because we did find warrants for them when we were doing the reconstruction.
I still have a feeling that the driver for the signals would be the warrants. So the safety, or the need to address a safety concern, or volumes, density reasons.
In this particular instance, it would be a pedestrian safety issue.
And I don't know if there's a warrant for the signal, just the pedestrian.
Yeah. We'd have to check with this.
We need our traffic expert to be able to answer that a little bit better with the check in time.
I think Randy Aspen handles our signals now. So you'd be the contact I could put you in contact with him.
Get us a traffic light, we'll have a parade.
We kind of figured that. We were hoping when we asked the question that we could scope out just that part of the project as and then the signals and have the rest of it resurface. And
we can name the crossing after you can.
What's that?
I'd hate to wait for someone to get hurt.
I was just going to say
I understand that. It's tough even for us as engineers.
Just to improve the safety of a crossing, it's dangerous now. And we pulled up the sidewalk 30 feet from the intersection, wouldn't cross, but
they
cross anyway.
So yeah, I guess to address Jim's question from the beginning, as far as DOT's preference, you know, those crossings are maintained by the local municipality, so as far as, you know, we don't really have a preference, it's more what the municipality prefers and is willing to maintain. as far as a mid-block crossing and a pedestrian refuge island, that, like the Hawk Signal, now there's not a refuge island in the middle. If there was, it would possibly increase the safety or improve the safety, because when you're only crossing the road, you know, you only have to look one direction, you can get to the middle, you have a relatively safer spot to stand because it's a raised median, and then you look the other direction and then you can cross. Hawk Signal helps because it is supposed to, you know, traffic is
supposed to stop.
So yeah, they can cross safely.
They're learning.
A raised median island can provide more benefit on an uncontrolled crossing, like say St. Joe's area, where you may not have a signal yet. You know, the benefit of a raised median crossing could be realized more there, because then people only have to cross one direction, stop in the middle, cross the other direction. So,
you know, by law, if you have a merge crosswalk there, mid-block, let's say, you don't have a refuge island, and let's say you have an RFB, which are the flashing white lights, people are supposed to, once somebody enters that crosswalk, they're supposed to stop.
Yeah.
So in theory, you don't need that refuge island. But that is there to make people feel safer, and for people that do not abide by the law.
Not red lights there. I don't know if anyone is going to walk out in the middle of the street at night.
Right.
Or in the day, really.
Yeah, during the day. But by law, people are supposed to stop.
Yeah.
My personal experience with the RFBs, I have them in my home colony. We have them. And very good compliance with them. And we have refuse islands and that kind of stuff, too. And it does feel safer once you hit it. If you see cars coming, you know, I'm not waiting for them to stop on the opposite side. I'm getting to the refuse island and then waiting for them. Mm-hmm. And if they don't, I feel safe, you know, if they're ignoring the lights.
Question for you guys. Do you feel you have better compliance with the Hawk Signal or with the crossing, the rapid flashing beacon up by Marine?
Hawk.
Definitely the Hawk.
Yeah.
But it's not perfect, but it's definitely better.
Didn't I hear that we weren't allowed to put the Hawk crossing in at the northern location because of proprietary, and it needed to be bid out or something like that?
That was the rapid flashing beacon. At the time, the federal government put a hold on that device for whatever reason. Maybe you guys can explain it. Proprietary product issue?
Yeah, it was something with a proprietary product issue. There was a court ruling on it that they had to put a stay on it.
And that was dropped then.
And then that got dropped.
And then we were
then
able
it was okay.
And then we were able to put up the rectangular rapid flashing beacon.
Kavuk.
Thank you. It's premature to wonder if we want a visit from the traffic department.
Do you want to do some investigating first?
Let me hold up Randy.
Yeah.
Randy has spoken at the village board meeting. He had come to talk about the crossing at 172 in Riverside Drive. And I can reach out to him. Maybe he can provide me some more information, and I can bring him back to this committee and go from there.
Yeah.
Yep. Is where we have all the data for any incidents that have occurred on Riverside, personal injury, property damage, anything like that. We already have that compiled somewhere.
We have crash data, and I don't know when the last time we pulled it. For sure we had it when we were looking at the reconstruct project, and we're just in the early stages of putting plans together for the next resurface, so yeah, we'll make sure we pull the updated data. I think it's, you know, it's like once they get it all compiled, it's about 6 months behind, you know, when you, so at the end of 2019, that data won't be fully ready until the, like, say, mid-2020. But yeah, we'll make sure we try to encompass that. It's something we can continue to monitor over the course of our design as well. So.
And that can be shared with this committee. It's not even more public than that.
Yep, could share with you.
And back then, it did warrant a traffic light.
Alloy met warrants because of it was a volume-related warrant. It wasn't safety-related at the time. I don't recall exactly which warrant it was. I don't recall exactly which one it was. But it was related to the number of vehicles using the intersection and turning movements, mm-hmm. and there wasn't, you know, we didn't have safety flags at either intersection at that time.
So it's just vehicle volume, not pedestrian volume.
Correct.
Yep. Seems like it should probably include both.
Well, we can take a look at pedestrian volume as well. When we were doing, when we were studying Riverside with the reconstruct pedestrian volumes, we did count pedestrian volumes down in the area of Arrowhead, mm-hmm. where the Hawk signal is now. And at the time, it didn't meet warrants for any type of adding any type of crossings. Now, you know, the argument was, well, if there was a crossing, then people would be using it. So, you know,
chicken or the egg,
right?
Mm-hmm. Right. So people love it.
That's good.
Do you keep track of how many signs get knocked down that are on the highway? Under the highway? Is that, to me, when I see that, I'm going like, that goes with pedestrian. But is that a number that's kept track of? The number of signs?
Not that I'm aware of, but it's probably something we could figure out. Our maintenance. County handles putting the signs back up. So
I see them all the time. I'm like, well, give the sign out of that then first.
Gentlemen, right. Thank you very much. Yeah. Nice to see you.
We will get back about funding for traffic signals if they were just local participating. We'll get back to you on that.
Awesome.
But that would even be a potential.
Maybe right, Stan.
No one would want to see a crossing called Siegerstrom. It would be able to pronounce.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Have a good night.
If there's no objections, we'll go ahead and move on to new business. Item number 4, purchase of a garbage truck.
The village's 5-year equipment replacement plan for 2020 had included the addition of a second leaf vacuum truck. We have been in discussions with the city of DePere. They have informed us that they will be replacing one of their garbage trucks 2020 next year. We are interested in the truck. They will either trade that truck in or sell it outright. They have indicated to us that if we make them an offer this fall, by the end of this month, that they would hold that truck and we could pay for it in 2020. Jim and Bob had gone over to take a look at it. Bob had gone through the truck. He had done some research on the value of it, and it is, you know, the Kelley Blue Book doesn't have values for a used garbage truck. He went out and looked at comparables, and based on that and his inspection of the vehicle and what would be needed to fix it and bring it up to speed so that we could use it as a leaf sucker truck. We feel that the value of the truck is somewhere between $15,000 and $22,000. That truck would then have to be retrofitted with a vacuum unit, and those cost anywhere between $40,000 and $60,000. The estimated total cost of the truck with a vacuum unit is roughly $80,000. We currently, in the fall, bale at the end of the season. We go out and bale leaves. We do have one leaf truck now, and we get that out as soon as the leaves start to drop. However, baling is a intensive process. It requires a lot of equipment and a lot of staff. Our hope is that by adding another leaf truck, that we can continue to evaluate whether or not we can move from baling to leaf sucking. We feel that there's some cost savings there, and by adding another truck, we can continue to evaluate that process. Bob, Jim, do you guys have anything to add?
I talk about the manpower itself, whatever we have with the baling operation.
Eight.
We feel that we could probably do the village with 3 trucks, leaf sucker trucks.
And we currently have one, right?
We have one.
This would be the second. And I'm sorry, what did you say, Jim? Eight? What what are we saying, eight men
to bail.
Eight men to bail. What do we mean by that? So it's each time of our bailing, it's
yes,
eight men.
It's eight men and eight pieces of equipment for roughly four to five. Sometimes we go a little longer than that, depending on the season. But that would be roughly $8 a day.
And I'm sorry again, so eight men, how many days to do a wind cycle of the village? That eight
depends
18?
On what
volume, okay.
But I would say, guessing, six, seven.
Okay. And the, so the Leaf sucker truck, we have three of them.
You lose five pieces of equipment, you will free up five people to do our job. Wow. If you have more, we're trying to do more.
Street
patching, new things we're trying to do.
This really ties into our continuous improvements that we've been working on.
You know, one of the problems with the baler is it's a messy operation. The leak truck is a little bit, cost substantial from your bailing operation, and that ties into your stormwater.
It does. In order to bail it, we have to pull the leaf piles that are on the boulevard into the roadway.
Right.
And now we're taking those
organics. Which better not be ahead of time.
you're pulling that organic material into the roadway for stormwater quality purposes, reasons. You don't want to do that. Because when it rains, it is a messy process. We do follow behind that process with the street sweeper, but you don't get it all. And when it rains, then that material goes into a storm sewer and discharge into a waterway, East River, the Fox River. So it is a dirty, messy process. The other thing too that I'd like to mention is the DNR will be providing more credit towards cleaner processes. More credit towards stormwater. If the leaf matter is left on the boulevard, you get more credit than a process that would bring that material into the roadway and then collect it. So it does help us that way. The other issue that we're running into, and Jim, you can get into the detail of it, but we're finding it hard to get rid of the bales. If the thing spits out a bale, and then we go out to farmers to try to get rid of these bales. They use it for bedding, or they spread it on the fields for compost. But we're finding that farmers don't want the bales because of the string. The string gets into their equipment and there's a headache. We have better luck with getting rid of the loose leaves in the vacuum trucks.
So tell me, what's the downside of this, other than the initial front cost?
Downside.
What's the downside you're going to suck? Is there?
I don't think there is.
How does the collection capacity compare for a vacuum truck with three versus a baler with eight? Is it the same? One more, one less?
I have that.
You mean is one faster than the other?
As far as
volume?
The baler does volume.
But you got to factor in the time that it takes to actually go there and put stuff into the street, as well as the baler running. It's not just the process of the baler running, right? So even that being said, it's still faster to bail?
It's a faster process, but it's a messy process. Part of the problem with the baler is if you could be, correct me if I'm wrong, you start out and say the north or south end, it doesn't matter, and you have six people within three blocks that have raked their leaves out. And then you run this through, and you're not going to get back there for many days. And then right behind them, there are all these people breaking it out. They're calling, they're complaining, we'll be back when we can. With the leaf sucker, you'd be able to catch all those smaller piles.
We call that pile hop.
Pile hop.
So how do you know that word for it? Yeah. When you have a two block section and there's either earlier in the season or late when we have the bulk picked up, you could have 10 houses on the street and we more or less smear it down the road.
We don't we smear them into the
pace.
You need volume for the baler to work. You need big leaf piles. Little leaf piles you can just drag down the road and smear it into the pavement, and then we come through
it's also a chaff that comes off the baler. In a farmer's field, you don't notice it, but as it's compacting it and making the bale and pushing it out the back, there's a chaff that falls off of the bale as part of the process of making it.
Have faith in this used truck and you think it's a good purchase.
I think you'll get 7 years out of the truck?
I would think so.
I see that probably the truck would probably, because they're used, and we converted a used garbage truck for our first one, the truck would go before the ODB unit, the leaf sucker portion. I see the leaf sucker portion probably, it's probably going to be like a 15-20 year unit. I see that coming off of this, the current truck going to another recycled truck. Mm-hmm. Which is used.
What would a brand new vehicle like that cost?
The chassis?
The truck and the sucker,
brand new unit.
ODB makes it, but we've got the pricing more that way. That's a rough guess.
That's it.
Okay.
So that's 10 years, 5 people, 5 weeks, 8 hours per day is what we're kind of estimating.
Yeah.
So was this in the capital budget or capital plan?
It is.
Before?
Yes, it was.
It wasn't just added to the capital plan? I'm guessing you didn't know you were going to get it from De Pere, though.
Yes. We've been communicating with them. De Pere,
too, though.
Yeah. Okay. De Pere had indicated. Well, De Pere had gone from baling to leaf sucker trucks a couple years ago. Is that correct?
Only converted 6.
Okay. A while ago, 6 or 7 years. They went from baling to leaf sucker trucks 5 to 6 years ago, and they have 6 leaf sucker trucks that they put out. When the leaves start to fall, and they're running continuously, and they're out collecting the leaves, regardless of the size of the pile, and they're keeping up. Where now we watch the trees and the leaf volume coming down, and when we find that the piles are big enough, we send out the baler, and we try to make multiple round trips around the village. Where this process is, if we find out this is the way that we want to head in the future, we'll leave these 3 trucks out for 4 or 5 weeks and try to stay on top of the leaf piles.
Everybody would have a section.
I mean, I like the cleanliness and keeping the debris out of the water, and that's 16,000 man hours over 10 years, so for $80,000. Can't find someone for $5 an hour.
That's for the second truck. We need the third, right?
Right.
Where do we have the third factor in?
2 years.
But just for that one.
2022.
But so until 2022, we still have to keep the baler, right? Because we're not going to be able to do this with just 2 suckers.
But we might be able to minimize the time that baler's out.
Because we don't own the baler, right?
We do.
Yeah,
we do. And should give you a little more background information. So we rent a tractor in the fall for 3 or 4 weeks. We had to pull the baler that we've owned now for, how long have we owned the baler?
6 years.
2012. It was this one.
We just be able to upload it? Part of time comes? Can we sell that?
Yes.
There's no other use for it, right? It's just the baler.
Yeah.
So that's then just to help with the understanding where the funding comes from. Comes from our equipment replacement fund. because, you know, we're not in a position to be making budgetary commitment, but since this is coming from the equipment replacement fund, it doesn't affect the tax rate. There's certainly a recommendation to the board is in order.
Okay.
Sorry to be very blunt. You're confident that we're not getting a POS from the pier in this truck that they're getting rid of. This is something that will serve us for a number of years, you think? It's
yes. We have some money as far as we can tell on it. But it's to be expected for the age of the vehicle.
Okay.
It's always a crapshoot.
I just want an educated crunch.
Yeah.
I just want an educated crunch.
We looked at that truck very.
Okay.
What year is it?
07.
Some pre-emissions? No doubt?
No doubt.
No doubt.
I like that.
Yep.
That just way up. Okay.
Part of the price increase on this, the new OBB unit, is that is emissions. I think the cost probably went up $15,000 to $20,000. That's because the emission equipment added to it.
That's going to be a constant.
Yeah, that'll ratchet up your maintenance.
Yep.
That'll ratchet down your reliability. And if we can get a pretty emissions truck.
Emission.
Where do I sign?
You can make a motion.
I would move to approve that plan.
Yeah, so you want to move to recommend that the board approve the purchase of the truck. I'll second it.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Motion passes.
Appreciate the time.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Thanks.
Thanks, guys. Next point is a recycling agreement from Brown County.
On a yearly basis, we...
I'm sorry, are we going to hand out on this?
No, there isn't.
Okay.
There might be. Yes, there is. Yeah. The agreement, though.
Right after the equipment replacement plan.
On a yearly basis, we submit a grant application to the DNR for recycling. 2019, this year, we received approximately $98,000 for our recycling program. The grant application requires that we have a signed agreement indicating that we work together with other communities on a recycling program. I have included the agreement that we need signed. This needs to be signed to be eligible for the grant, and it just indicates that we collaborate with other communities on our recycling program, and we do that through our agreement with Brown County. We have an agreement with Brown County to properly dispose of our recyclables.
And then the state gives us the grant?
Yes.
And Brown County the grant?
They give us the state gives us the grant.
I'll make a motion. We recommend to the board to approve the recycling agreement.
I'll second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Special things? Okay, thank you. DOT local road improvement program, item 6 on new business. What's that?
Yeah, there is no handle for this.
There's a memo.
Oh, the staff right up. I'm sorry. So on the 18th of October, grant applications are due for the Local Road Improvement Program grant. This is a grant through the state administered by the Brown County Highway Commissioners. In the past, we have received funding through this grant. The grant comes out every other year. We've been informed that there's $259,000 for 9 villages in the Brown County. I will be submitting a grant application in October. I've met with Public Works staff. We have selected a roadway that we'd like to submit for the funding. Arbor Lane from Staten Court to St. Andrews. or Andrews Court, sorry, roughly 1,500 feet in length. It would be a maintenance project. It would be a street repair project. We anticipate the cost of that project being somewhere between $150,000 to $175,000. What's that?
I said, holy crap.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money for that little bit of distance.
It's roughly 1,600 to 1,700 feet. The work would include, it would be a full pavement replacement project. We'd come in and mill off all the pavement. I would come in and prepare the existing base, spot repair the curb and gutter, and then they would come in and put down 4 inches of asphalt.
They have a percentage that they do, or like limited at 80%?
No, but in years past, the public works directors want to spread this money out amongst the nine villages. In years past, they have elected to split the money with half of the villages, and this year we didn't receive any funding in 2018. So this year we would receive funding and divide the $260,000 by nine. It's roughly about $53,000 that we could receive towards this project.
You divide it by five, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Four
or five.
We didn't get it for 2 years, all right.
Yeah, the grant comes out every other year.
Oh, okay.
And it's for two funding cycles, and then they come out with another grant. So, and we didn't get any funding in 2018. So they have indicated that there's $259,000 available. Divide that by five. So
half the municipalities receive it.
To spread the money out, the public works directors have elected to spread it amongst half of the nine villages in Brown County.
Otherwise, it probably gets a little
right.
It would be in
right.
And then the one man flip flop.
Yes.
With the others, I mean that's just.
Yep.
Besides, it's easy to. Anybody coming in on villages? You know,
are they
listed
on the previous page?
Oh, they are. You mean right here in front of me?
Shaman and Belvin.
Thank you. I'll shut up. Sorry, you were saying.
Well, I don't know. And I don't know, Kurt, if that those are all villages.
There's eight listed here.
Villages, and then, what, nine towns? And nine towns, right?
You're looking at the recycling agreement, though.
Yeah.
So part of this program is it's the Pier, Bellevue, Ashwaubenon, Holloway, Green Bay. What did I see?
Swamacone. Howard.
Swamacone.
Yeah.
And that's the.
Is Green Bay considered a village?
No, this is different. This
is that different.
For the recycling agreement, and that's all these people.
And I'm just borrowing this to figure out what the other eight villages are that are in this area.
But it's not just villages that are part of this.
Right, it would be towns and cities as well.
Yeah, it's the Brown counties.
Okay.
To my knowledge, there are different funding levels. For cities, the funding would be different than for villages.
Yep.
There's a different funding level for townships as well. So.
And I'm sorry, I don't mean for that. No.
You don't need an action on this stuff. You said you're going to.
I think the recommendation of the board would be to
move ahead with Arbor Lane for Albert funding. A motion to the village board to move ahead with Arbor Lane for Albert funding.
Yep.
Yeah.
But we can't approve the reconstruction of that until we go through the budget. Right?
Right, but we have to sign this grant.
Okay, so So Meg will apply the project on Arbor Lane to them.
Okay.
So I'd make a motion that we recommend to the Village Board that you submit the grant application for that amount with the work to be done on Arbor Lane.
Right. And we're not going to know what the exact funding level will be until after the Highway Commissioners.
This is just to submit the application.
Yes, yes, this is just to submit it.
And I'm sorry.
Okay.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Motion passes.
Thank you. Moving on to our discussion of the fourth section, point 8 on the agenda, Libel Street Surface Transportation Block Grant.
This is another DOT grant that we are applying for. This is a state transportation block grant. We've discussed this in the past. I wanted to provide an update on this because I have recently put together, I guess I should say, revised the application that had been submitted years past for this grant. I had taken a look at the scope of the project. It was originally scoped as a rehabilitation project from 172 North to Culp. The project was roughly 1.6 miles in length. Rehabilitation was pavement replacement project with the addition of sidewalk, where it doesn't currently exist along that segment of the roadway. On the west side from the Green to Alloway Avenue and on the east side of Lytle Street from Beaupré to Culp. After I looked into the project a little bit more, I had found out that Libel Street, the segment of Libel Street, was originally reconstructed in the late 1970s. So the age of the roadway is pushing 50 years, and typically speaking, the lifespan of a reconstruction project is roughly 50 years. We have gone out and evaluated the condition of the roadway surface. It is in poor condition. However, we think we can still rehab the north part of the project from Alloway to Culp. It's from Green to Alloway Avenue that we'd like to reconstruct the project rather than rehabilitate it because of the narrow right-of-way. The project had scored high originally because of the addition of multimodal transportation facilities, sidewalk and bike accommodations. So to make sure that there's enough money available, if we receive the grant, I had scoped the project as a reconstruct from Culp to Alloway Avenue. It doesn't mean that we can't go back to a rehabilitation. It's just I want to make sure that the application reflects itself after the project being reconstructed. So it is roughly speaking a $2 million increase in project cost from what we had originally scoped. So the revised application and cost estimate just recently been submitted to the MPO and the DOT. They're going to take the projects that have been submitted by communities in Green Bay, in Brown County, and those will be scored by Brown County MPO and brought to the Brown County Plan Commission Transportation Subcommittee next week, Tuesday. We'll that meeting learn more about the project scoring, which project scored the highest, and at what levels these projects will be funded. Your hope is that they'll be fully funded, that it'll be an 80-20% cost share, 80% funded by federal government or federal funds, and the other 20 by a local community. Should point out that the funding does not include what they call non-participating costs. that would be right-of-way acquisition, and any improvements that we'd like to make to our underground utilities, public utilities. The total cost of this project is estimated at $5.3 million. It does include the design and construction oversight. It also includes inflation. If we're informed that we're going to get the grant, it's likely that the design of the project will start in 2021 and construction will begin in 2024. Wanted to just provide an update on the grant application and offer any questions.
We've applied for it before?
We have, yes.
But didn't receive anything?
Right.
Do we know how we scored before?
We scored high, I think top three.
Top three?
The bid funds.
Okay.
I noticed on the bicycle lanes, I think that it's a much better project than what's described in there, because I see the bicycle lane as an arterial bicycle lane connecting the pier with Green Bay, and then also having secondary routes down for recreation down to Green Isle Park, and to start making bike loops. So we have a bike committee. We looked at all the interconnected ways, but the backbone, the best backbone that we have for a north-south corridor is Lytle Street, because it's level, flat, and it's much safer than Riverside and Webster. So
okay.
That was the only thing I noticed on there, is that it's a much better project. I think if we get a lot more points, if we took a look at it, said on a secondary basis, coming off of that as a backbone corridor to connect what's already in place, how we just put in on Hoffman Road.
Okay, Sean, what's next?
Mr. Agenda?
Yep.
Yeah. Nothing else we need to do with that, correct?
Right now? No, it's just an update.
Awesome. Then we have a 2019 street construction project update.
Now, I want to quickly give you guys an update on our reconstruction and repair projects. Starting at the south end of the village, working north, Longview Avenue on Friday of last week, we put down a final layer of asphalt. That project is substantially completed. And the project limits were from Delahunt to Libel Street. Oakwood Avenue, from Green to Alloway Avenue, right now contractors were currently working between Mission and Alloway Avenue installing the utilities. At the south end of the project, they're currently cutting in the road, subgrading, placing base on Oak Hill Drive. From Beaumont to Oakwood Ave, the installation of utilities has been completed, and when the excavating work on the south half of Oakwood Ave has been completed, that subcontractor will jump over to Oak Hill Drive. Summit Street, the installation of utilities, the utilities have been installed between Beaumont and Oakwood Avenue, and the contractor's done cutting in the subgrade at Oak Hill and placing the base, they'll jump over to Summit Street. Cut the subgrade and place the base. Martha Avenue, curb and gutters have been poured. The street is waiting to be paved, hopefully by the end of this week. St. Joseph Street, with the exception of touch-up of landscaping and placement of signs, that street project has been completed. Brookridge Street, Woodrow and Brookridge Street, from Dauphin to Libel. Northeast Asphalt put down the final layer of asphalt on that segment of roadway on Saturday. With the exception of the landscape restoration, that street repair project has been completed. Beaupré Street, liable to Webster Avenue. We anticipate the contractor to start on that project middle of this month, as early as next week. And that is a mill and resurface project. Warren Court, the contractor this week has started installing storm sewer at Riverside Drive in Warren Court. It's a remove and replace. We've had issues with the storm sewer there because of the depth. We were able to lower the storm sewer there, and we're hopeful that through that we don't have a freeze-thaw action. We've been seen through the roadway, and we're hopeful that the storm sewer doesn't freeze shut in the winter and create flooding upstream. So that project is going to take 4 to 6 weeks to complete. It's just started. Give an update on Blackhawk Drive. I have sent out plans and estimates to contractors that we have contracts with in the reconstruction projects. I'm hopeful that one of the two contractors has availability and willing to honor your unit prices provided in one of the street reconstruct contracts to get that work done this year. It's a short segment of reconstruct, about 200 feet from Libel east of the midpoint of the first curve. If it doesn't get reconstructed this year, we would bid it early next year and reconstruct the roadway spring of next year. Old River Condominium Trail Project, we just recently met with the owners of the Old River Condominium Development, and as a group have decided to delay the construction of the Old River Trail until spring of fall of next year. Extend the agreement out to fall next year. We'll amend the engineering agreement that we put together last year for that development and bring that through the Public Works Committee.
Why are we doing that?
Twofold. One is trying to get the work done, and two, it's they have not sold what they were hoping to at this point, and don't want to be putting a burden on, and we don't want to be spending the money at this point either. So trying to get a contractor in. We never even got to Green Isle Park this year because so much work.
Mm-hmm. The burden? What burden would they put on by? They've given us the money for it, right?
They have not given the money yet.
Oh, they haven't?
No.
Because
they're committed to do it. They want it in. It's just trying to get it in yet this year is going to be strong.
Okay. They've sold what, one?
Potentially two.
Okay.
How many units? How many units total?
15.
Any questions on the street reconstruct or repair projects?
Oh, nice job.
A lot of work. There's no questions on that. We can move on because we don't need to approve that update. Right?
Just
that update. Great. Discussion on the brush wire.
Yeah, just wanted to provide an update on this as well. We had just recently put together a flyer that we're going to send out. The flyer will go out. I hope that will go out on Friday. To hopefully get the message out to those that may not go to our website or may not have a smartphone to get our email post or blast. We're hopeful that this will reach out to those that don't get that information and inform them of how we want brush placed, that we need clean brush, and we need parallel to the curb and that it needs to be a certain length and width. And this is a result of the CI program.
Were you going to add anything to the flyer about signing up for the newsletter? Or?
We were, but it
didn't get through.
Didn't fit.
We work on maybe rephrasing or updating just a little warning.
We did.
Details that are going out there just to make it more clear as to what the.
I have done that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I can send you a copy of that if you take a look at it.
It's already done. I trust you. You made it more clear. That's great.
Yeah.
One thing just to point out on this flyer that we're sending out, we're highlighting the LeBron Yardways during the fall leaf collection. We're going to have to leave it open 24 hours a day.
So that. That's cool.
That's so new. We haven't done that before, have
we? Well, we did it during a storm event and saw no problems. So we want to, that's part of that continuous, and we want to get to a point where it's open and available for people so that they'll take advantage of hauling their own stuff versus relying on the village to pick it up. And if the hours are nonstop for them, they can do it.
Cool.
I mean, I love it. Do we run into issues with 24 hours a day versus kind of similar to what Brown County does with just daylight hours? Green Bay does with daylight. For safety, or are we okay? Is that
I think
pretty
we're okay.
Well back then? I love 24/7, but I just worry about the risk.
We're monitoring with it. Yeah.
Okay. Nice job.
That's awesome.
This really, I mean, spells it out very well. I think that'll help people a lot.
I love the flyer. I do have one comment, just the way my mind works. Maybe it won't make sense to everyone, but you guys can decide and do what you want. So we have confusion a little bit, like brush and yard waste, and people may not know what's what, and you describe it very well. But I would just say, consider it if you want. So for the brush pickup headline, it says brush pickup update. And then for the other, it's 2019 fall cleanup. I can see some people not really knowing. They're just like, oh, there's this pickup update and there's a cleanup. What goes where? And maybe I need clarification as well. But maybe if they look very similar, but one is like brush pickup monthly, April through, I don't know when it actually is, but it would be like brush pickup is monthly, April through November. And then yard waste pickup, spring and fall. You know, so they kind of look similar, but in the titles may show the difference between the two. Like this one is for brush, and this is for yard waste. And you can do with it what you want. That's how my mind works.
No, it's a good suggestion. And when we do the all-around alleyway, that's when it's going to come out next, and we're trying to update that, mm-hmm. and maybe that's what we need. Those are the kind of comments that we need.
Yep. Do we still have garden waste? Is different from yard waste?
I think they're two.
They're defined in this.
To the same, much. Right? Garden and yard waste.
I believe in brush, it had corn stalks and other things that may come from the garden, but they're just describing the size.
Nice job.
Very nice.
Any other issues, concerns, topics from anyone?
Nope. A motion to adjourn.
Second.
Any objections? All approved?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you very much.